Should I let myself go in his direction? Is his love strong enough for my heart's protection? I don't know.
So we were just listening to Ruth Brown.
Ruth Brown took it right off the Atlantic label. The Atlantic label, if you remember that one, was referred to itself as the house that Ruth built. I actually, this is one of the joys that I have in doing the show that I do, which is the Neon Beat, is in, I've kind of been learning as I go.
Yeah.
All right. Ruth Brown was known as the Queen of R&B, sometimes called that. And I just heard the song, I Don't Know. I just played it for you a few minutes ago. What you think?
I loved it. I totally. And it had that Phil Spector vibe to it.
Right. Well, the Atlantic label.
Yeah.
It did have that wall of sound thing going.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, what I was playing there was a ladder recording, ladder stereo recording of the thing. Ruth only passed away here recently. But now, you made an observation just a few minutes ago after listening to that. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing just as you walk through this stuff, how when you discover there's just a whole genres and areas of music that can come into play no matter what particular style or something you tend to pigeonhole yourself in.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, with jazz and the American Songbook, it doesn't matter how much you pick and choose and you put on your show, there's always that possibility that somebody's going to be out there. Like when we discovered Jill Barber, the vocalist from Canada. Amazing, you know?
And then I introduced what was off the Natalie Cole album that she made with her friends, which was basically a tribute to Ella Fitzgerald. But she played, she got a recording of this the 14, 15-year-old girl, Canadian.
Yes.
Was there a Yanofsky?
Yanofsky.
Nikki Yanofsky.
Yes.
And I had never heard of her.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm tracking that away, and she's doing this wonderful version of Airmail Special. I mean, as quick and as distinct as Ella did it.
Yeah.
And not surprisingly, she's gone on to a great career.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a world open up. You don't have to get held up in just songs about dead people.
No, you don't. Well, it's funny. When you were describing that, I was thinking about an interview I had with a jazz drummer named Allison Miller.
Yeah.
And she was telling me about her trip to Italy and how she was inspired by the fact that this entire field, there was all these bugs underneath that you can't see, but keeps that ecosystem going. There is always a plethora of musicians out there that are doing this, and it's our job as people presenting this to find these people out.
Yep.
So it's a good thing. Speaking of, a little offshoot that I want to go here real quick. There's a guy, lately I've been getting people that have been sending me songs, and there's one in particular, there's no way that I could have done this. Michael Felberbaum, he's Italian born, he lives in Paris, he got a hold of me. He's worked with cats like Roy Hargrove, Joshua Redman, and even the poet Allen Ginsberg. He sends me a track, I play it on the show, and before his track, I play the song Calls by Paul Bley, his 87 CD, and that is his favorite album, Michael's favorite album. There's no way that I could have choreographed that.
Wow. Isn't that something? Is sometimes it's you couldn't make it up, the way it come out. Yeah. Your talk with Sonny Rollins that one time was just remarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when you called me and you said, hey, talking to Sonny, man. And you were like on a cloud. It's one of your earliest... one of your earliest interviews. I think, first of all, it was just the fact that you were able to get Sonny to talk to you over the phone. And then you two just hit it off.
And that was in the early days where I was like, wait, hold on a second. Sonny Rollins, I'm going to be speaking to Sonny Rollins. Yeah. Oh, my God. But I always do that. I always call you after an interview.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing. And this is one thing I should have called you about. There was a man named Terry Manning. He has a new album coming out called Planets. And he's an engineer and a producer down in Memphis. He's also a photographer, a great photographer. He took the last images of Dr. Martin Luther King on April 3, 1968, and explained the story to me. It was surreal.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I meant to ask you, who was the guy that told you the story about he was dating a gal that belonged to Frank Sinatra? Or at least according to Frank, who was that?
Reggie Watkins told me the story that he heard on a tour bus from Maynard Ferguson.
Okay, it was Maynard.
Yes.
Okay, it was secondhand, Maynard Ferguson.
Yes, and this is how the story went. And right. Reggie said this is in the annals of Gems. Maynard was dating one of Frank Sinatra's girls.
Not really realizing it was one of Frank's gals.
Exactly, and this is when Maynard moved to L.A. to be kind of a film TV guy. So he goes out there, and all of a sudden, there's a goon on his doorstep. Huge, 6'7", mountain of muscle.
Yeah.
He has an LP and a Sharpie and knocks on the door. And Maynard's like, there's no way this dude wants an autograph. So the guy asked for an autograph. He gives it to him, and he said, why are you really here? And the guy said, don't ever call Frank's girl again. You're done. And he told the guy, I'm going to use a radio-friendly term here, but he basically told the guy to go to hell and slam the door. And he basically said that 2 or 3 months later, they were on a TV studio set.
Yeah.
Frank was there, and he walked by Maynard and said one thing to him. Kid, you got a lot of balls. And that was it.
That's great. See, you can't make that stuff
no.
up. And the longer you hang around the community and make yourself a part of the family,
yeah.
and really want, and if you approach it with a certain honesty, and may I say innocence.
Yeah.
I mean, I admit it. There's a lot of this stuff I didn't know until I got to talking about it on the air. Same as you.
Sure.
And what you discover is these people are largely open books and glad to have you talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the beauty of this whole process, too, in the very beginning when this started in 2011, I told you that I wanted to interview so I could learn firsthand jazz. And the amount of learning and education, I mean, this whole, like, all these stories, way above and beyond anything that I would ever hear. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and when you hear it, when you're in the middle of listening to someone say, I took the final images of someone like Dr. Martin Luther King, you just sit there and you're like, I'm witnessing a slice of history. It's cool stuff. And then you could hear about Frank and the entanglements of Sinatra and his world. It's crazy.
It's the stories that I like to get from behind the scenes
when they're
having fun, or when sometimes they're not having as much fun. I remember Sarah Vaughan talking about her what it was to be on to be sometimes, how do I put this, interrogated by somebody that really didn't know what they were talking about.
Right.
And it put her off.
Yeah.
I said, are you just getting this? I think she asked a illustrator in the publication that I think once.
Oh, the Downbeat interviews.
The Downbeat interviews, that book that she gave me. I was reading that, and then she apparently kind of got a little short with a guy who just, you know, do you really understand what you're talking about?
Right.
You're just doing a job.
Right.
Okay, she kind of gave a little attitude at first, and it was kind of earned.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting. I got last month's Downbeat. Jeremy Pelt, big-time modern-day jazz trumpeter, wrote a letter, like a regular person writing a letter to Downbeat, and said, you had this opportunity to interview me, and I have Cloud, and you compared all of these things to people that I played with. They didn't really profile him, and he was upset about it. I interviewed him at the same time, and I could feel that kind of bristle, that kind of part of him thinking, is this guy talking about me performing with Wayne Shorter or what I've done? And I always try to do that with these guys. I like to hear stories about Miles.
Yeah.
But these people stand on their own. They got clout. I'm not calling them up because they're not who they are.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to respect that. And I think that's the thing about journalism, what I've tried to do with these interviews. These people are monoliths on their own.
Yeah. The other thing you bring to the table, Joe, is that you love jazz.
Period.
What I bring to the table to my radio show is I love music, and I love music of that particular era. I'm told, at least, that comes out on the air, and that's what sets you and I think, above the level for just a little bit.
Yeah, and that's why
I'm not just doing a job here. I love this.
Yeah, we completely love it. As we say, we do that thing we do.
We're doing that thing we do.
We do.
Neon jazz.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the things that we love about these musicians is that soul oozes out of what they're doing. What they're doing is moving us, you know, and all we can do is stand on the shoulder of giants and do the same thing. And that's what we're doing.
Yep.
You know, so it's good times, man.
Yes, it is. And it's fun from our end of it to kind of go to the canvas, which is the airwaves or
paint.
The internet, and just paint, not just bring you a little bit of the world, but also to a bit of ourselves.
Yeah, without a doubt. Or as Bob Ross would say, we're just putting little trees there on the canvas. Little clouds.
All right. We'll whacka 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 here with a hairbrush and
just beat the devil out of that brush. That's why we're doing this.
I always
this.
Thought that brush sounded like my Labrador when he was shaking his head. Dude,
get your dog out of here. I love Bob Ross. He still makes me nervous. I don't know what he's going to do.
Yep. You know? Even Andy Kaufman still makes me nervous.
Yeah, right.
I keep expecting the man to come back on stage. I was only kidding you. Yes. Boy.
I just left for 30 years. I'm good. But my favorite bit from him, one of my favorites, is when he has that huge talk show table that's like 30 feet above the guest. And he says, I can't hear you. You got to speak up down there.
Just Lily Tomlin gone wrong.
That's right. All right. Well, so this won't be an actual closer that we do on a regular basis, but this is John and Joe telling you what we know.
That'll work. Somebody asked me, come up to me and say, what do you know? And I said, I don't know. You got 30 seconds. That's all it'll take.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. And we are what we are. And I am what I am. And it's all what I am. Oh, thank you, bye-bye.
And always remember, folks, drive fast and talk back to the cops.
All right. And with that there, Kerouac, we're out.
Thank you. Good night.
Neon Jazz.